When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mean Ol' Lion Media presents Pregnancy Pearls. Meet Dr. Nicole Plenty, a double board certified OBGYN and high risk pregnancy expert. She's brilliant, well-researched, and feisty. Growing tired of seeing complications of pregnancy that could have been prevented, she wanted a way to empower women through knowledge because, as she says, all doctors aren't created equal. This quest to educate women birthed this podcast, Pregnancy Pearls with Dr. Plenty.
Thanks for listening to Pregnancy Pearls Podcast with me, Dr. Plenty. Ladies and gents, we've made it officially to March, which is one of my favorite months because it's Women's History Month. So this month, we celebrate all those women pioneers, past and present, who have paved the way for us, making working towards our goal just so much easier. So I salute you, all of you, brave women who are listening. And so make sure to do something special for yourself this month. Yep, you deserve it. We all deserve it. Now, all right, I've had a few questions this week about Bell's palsy and how pregnancy can be related to this condition. So I felt that we should probably chat about it on this week's issue of the podcast. So we'll do just that. In short, Bell's palsy, if you've never heard of it, is a condition that is caused by unexplained paralysis of the facial nerve, which is the seventh cranial nerve. And that facial nerve basically is going to be one of the main nerves that innervates or causes control of muscles in your face. Okay. That helps you make a smile. It helps you make a frown. It helps you cry. Without that nerve, or if you have damage to that nerve, then you can have some issues doing that. Bell's palsy is usually evident due to pain and discomfort occurring on one side of the face or the head. It's very rare to occur on both sides of the face. It can also cause a headache, drooling, loss of senses of taste in the front two-thirds of the tongue. You can be super hypersensitive to sound. You can lose control of muscles that control facial expression. So you can't really frown. You may have issues with crying as well. And you may literally feel numb or lose sensation in your face. Bell's palsy occurs in patients between 15 to 60 years of age, so childbearing. And it does affect men and women about equally. So it's not one of those diseases like most autoimmune conditions where women are more predisposed to the condition. Most people that get Bell's palsy are going to recover fully between two weeks and 6 months after their initial symptoms develop. Now, unfortunately, we don't quite know why some people get Bell's palsy and why some people don't. But we do know there is a higher association of Bell's palsy in patients with some of the following conditions. If you have high blood pressure or what's called chronic hypertension or high blood pressure before you got pregnant, you're more likely to get Bell's palsy. If you have a condition called Lyme's disease, which Lyme disease is something that occurs most often in the Midwest part of the country, it can be linked to different bacterial infection. And it usually is in conjunction with Bell's palsy, to be perfectly honest. So Lyme's disease is usually treated with antibiotic and steroids. And it's usually initiated because of a tick-borne vector a tick-borne vector. So like a deer tick is usually the thing that is the initiating factor. And then it causes like a fatigue, flu-like symptoms. And you can also develop a rash. And then shortly after that, you can get the facial droop because that is the Bell's palsy component, which most people think that that's a component of Lyme disease, but it's not. So Lyme disease is commonly related to Bell's palsy. Some people can also have Guillain-Barré syndrome and then develop Bell's palsy. Guillain-Barré, which I believe we talked about this in season one. This is going to be an ascending paralysis, usually following a viral illness like the flu. So all of a sudden, you can't move your legs. Then you can't, you know, stand up because you're so weak. Then you may have issues with breathing. So it can ascend from the bottom, I mean, from your feet up, and cause issues with paralysis there. Autoimmune conditions and patients that have them, like sarcoidosis, multiple sclerosis, myasthenia gravis. If you have any of those conditions, you are more predisposed to getting Bell's palsy. People that have diabetes are also predisposed or at increased risk for Bell's palsy. If you have an injury, because your immune system is revving up and you have a lot of inflammation, you are at higher risk for Bell's palsy. And again, infection, because it causes a whole bunch of your immune cells to rev up. There's a higher risk of associated Bell's palsy. Now, the infection we worry about is specifically after HSV or herpes simplex virus, which is the same virus that causes cold sores and or genital herpes. And yes, pregnancy is associated with Bell's palsy. Bell's palsy is usually self-limiting and resolved on its own. So treatment is aimed at making sure the underlying issue, if it's like an infection, is treated, and also those symptoms are treated. Sometimes, depending on the severity of symptoms, your physician might treat with steroids to reduce inflammation, an antiviral if you're suspected to have like flu, or if you're suspected to have herpes simplex virus, they may treat those conditions that'll help get rid of the symptoms faster. You can also be treated with pain relievers because some people do have associated pain, especially in the region of their face. And you can have physical therapy to stimulate nerve function. I know what you're thinking now. Why and how is Bell's palsy related to pregnancy, right? So before we go to questions, we got to talk about that. Now, pregnancy does not cause Bell's palsy. Let's start there. Bell's palsy during pregnancy is associated with a higher incidence of preeclampsia, which, if you remember my last episodes on preeclampsia, which I think I've talked about it all three previous seasons, and this one. Preeclampsia is when you have high blood pressure and vascular damage, which we look for as protein in your urine. And it's also associated with HELLP syndrome, which is on a more severe spectrum of preeclampsia, which when you have high blood pressure, protein in urine, plus you have damage to your liver and kidney. So you may have decreased kidney and liver function indicated by lab abnormalities. Now, if it occurs on both sides, so if you have Bell's palsy with both facial nerves affected, so you have basically paralysis of all the muscles in the face, this may be the primary sign of preeclampsia, which may indicate a worse prognosis of the actual disorder. So this requires very careful surveillance and high-risk intervention. Symptoms of Bell's palsy during pregnancy or in the immediate postpartum period can appear suddenly and typically worsen within 48 hours of the onset of symptoms. This is often confused with a stroke during pregnancy, which is an emergency and must be ruled out first. So we can't assume that a facial droop is Bell's palsy until after we rule out a stroke. Now, there are several theories that exist as to why there's an increased incidence of Bell's palsy in pregnancy. And they include, one, there's an increased total body water that leads to swelling, and that swelling can cause compression of the facial nerve. Two, you have a weakened immune system, especially in the third trimester, which can lead to reactivation of dormant viruses. So if you had chickenpox or varicella, or you had herpes, those viruses lay dormant and then you get reactivation of that. And that can stimulate your immune system that can damage the facial nerve. Three, you have increased clotting factors. And again, this can also impact the facial nerve, and really all nerves, but the facial nerve being most common. And then four, elevated levels of hormones like estrogen and progesterone can also increase the risk of Bell's palsy, okay? So basically, in pregnancy, your immune system is going haywire. So because those immune cells are going wild, you're more likely to have damage to those more used muscles. And there's really not a nerve that's more used than the facial nerve, because you're always talking, right? And so your immune system revving up is going to can cause some inflammation around that facial nerve. Now that we know a little bit more about Bell's palsy and how it's associated with pregnancy, let's go to some cases.
Our first case is a 37-year-old who is 3 days postpartum with her third child. She developed high blood pressure and palpitations and fluid in her lungs the day before she delivered. She was diagnosed with preeclampsia at that time and was delivered via C-section after her blood pressure and fluid on her lungs was treated. Today, which is post-op day three, she developed an inability to close her left eye. On the same side, her mouth is noticed to be drooping. You were consulted for further management.
With anybody that has preeclampsia with severe features, which the fact that she had high blood pressures, I mean, the top number is 160 or higher, the bottom number or the diastolic number is 110 or higher, and are any symptoms, okay? Headache, blurry vision or double vision, pain over your liver at the top right-hand part of the abdomen. These are symptoms of preeclampsia. They require immediate delivery. And so hopefully I would have been consulted before post-op day three, but I digress. I understand the cases are sent in and they are for discussion of what to do next. Usually your MFM or maternal fetal medicine provider would have been consulted before the delivery if someone was delivered because of preeclampsia. And I will make sure I point out that this person had fluid on their lungs. That fluid on their lungs is called pulmonary edema. That in itself is a symptom that you have really concerning preeclampsia. And that fluid needs to be treated and offloaded in order for somebody to be stable enough to maintain their oxygen saturation or their oxygen levels if they're laying flat on the table. So you have to be stabilized before you do the C-section. Once somebody has a C-section with preeclampsia, we do watch them really closely because we can have some third spacing, meaning shifting of fluid from, you know, your swollen legs. Now that fluid is shifting into the lung fields, okay? And your heart may not be able to clear or circulate blood as effectively, which then is going to further cause blood to back up into your lung fields. Now you already have fluid there, then your body is not oxygenating the blood that's flowing through the lungs to be oxygenated, which then causes your heart to try to pump even harder, which then worsens the fluid that can build up in your lungs. So this is like a cycle that's never ending, which is why they have to be stable before you go to a C-section. Now, I will say there's nothing that could have been done to prevent the symptoms that follow the C-section. When I see somebody that's inability to close their left eye or facial drooping, which is what she's having, the first thing I'm going to do, like I said before in the discussion, is we're going to rule out a stroke. Why? In the back of my head, I'm thinking facial droop, can't close your eye. That usually is associated with Bell's palsy because a stroke is not going to just knock out your facial nerve, right? Facial nerve is basically going to come from the back of your skull out to the side, like almost like deep to the ear, and then sort of splay out like in a web fashion across the face. When you have a stroke that's infecting the brain, it's usually not going to just hit that one nerve, right? So in the back of my mind, I'm already thinking based on her symptoms that this is probably Bell's palsy, but Bell's palsy is not going to kill you. A stroke can kill you. And I'm not trying to say that to be scary, but I'm saying it to say as an MFM, this is how I think. I think what is going to be the biggest thing that impacts this patient? What's going to stop this patient from being healthy enough to go home with this child? What's going to cause this patient to not survive to raise this child? Whatever that thing is, I need to rule that thing out first. So if I have somebody that's now stable, meaning blood pressure's okay, they're breathing okay, they look okay, and they have a droop and these symptoms, I'm going to get a CT of the head immediately, stat CT. Why? Because stroke can look like this, okay? I'm going to rule out a stroke with a CT scan. If the CT scan is negative, then the next thing I would do is counsel the patient and say, hey, I think you have Bell's palsy, which could have been caused and associated with your preeclampsia. And since you have severe form of preeclampsia, this goes with Bell's palsy and can be a more severe form of Bell's palsy, one that is less likely to spontaneously resolve on its own. And I would start high-dose steroids to be aggressive in treating this Bell's palsy. We got to make sure that nothing else is going on. So anybody that we think has Bell's palsy, we're going to do blood cultures, or we're going to take blood and look to see if there's bacteria in the blood. We're going to do a chest x-ray to make sure we don't have any evidence of pneumonia. We're going to check your urine to make sure she doesn't have evidence of a UTI. The point I'm making is we got to make sure there's no underlying infection, because we got to treat the infection, which is the thing that's revving the immune system up so high, that's causing the Bell's palsy, right? So once I rule those things out, then I'm going to continue with my high dose steroids for treatment of Bell's palsy. And I'm also going to call a neurology friend, a neurologist, to help me once this patient's going home and once this patient can be followed once they are at home, who is a specialist. So nerve doctors are neurologists. So I'm going to consult neurology to see if they have any further management with this. So the case pro for this case is Bell's palsy can develop even after delivery. Promptly ruling out a stroke is the number one priority even before you definitively diagnose the Bell's palsy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, medical intern, what's our next case?
The second case is the patient who is 33 years old and 32 weeks and 6 days pregnant with her first child. She recently was diagnosed with Bell's palsy after presenting with a right-sided facial droop and weakness. A CT scan ruled out a stroke. Because she is pregnant, the neurologist says the steroids can be dangerous for the unborn baby. Therefore, you were consulted for further management and treatment.
There's a lot of times that people are very reluctant in treating people with steroids during pregnancy, because steroids, one, some have limited studies, but two, there used to be a past study that showed association with babies having cleft lip and palate with moms that take steroids that can cross the placenta. Usually those are dexamethasone or beta, dexamethasone in high dose. Are usually the studies that those have been associated with. But now we know those studies are not higher than the background risk of having cleft lip and cleft palate. When we say background risk, we mean what's the risk of everybody in the general population versus that population that just has this one single thing, right? So if the background risk of anybody having a fetal malformation, like a heart defect or brain defect, if anybody has a background 3-5% chance of a structural malformation, and these studies show a 3.5% chance, we know that this is just the same risk of the general population. And so I would recommend starting high-dose steroids if we needed to start high-dose steroids to be as aggressive as we possibly can. We have to realize that the recovery is 80 to 90% full recovery, no symptoms with Bell's palsy outside of pregnancy. In pregnancy, the full recovery rate is much lower. It's about 55 to 65% complete recovery. And when we look at studies, those studies show that there's a much higher recovery rate, meaning becoming asymptomatic rate, in those that did not get steroids versus those that did. And so even in pregnancy, it's a completely normal thing, an acceptable thing to treat with steroids. If someone is very early in the pregnancy and they're going to be on steroids for a number of weeks, then if somebody's been on steroids, that's at least 10 milligrams of steroids, equivalent to 10 milligrams of prednisone daily for 3 weeks, then I would recommend stress dose steroids. And you can talk to your OBGYN about stress dose steroids, but usually it's with either hydrocortisone, which we give 100 milligrams, via an IV every 6 hours for 24 hours. Some people give solumedrol, 125 milligrams every 8 hours for three doses. Some people give, you know, prednisone and taper. So everybody's a little bit different with what kind of stress those steroids they give if you've been on prolonged steroids during the pregnancy. And the reason that we do that is so your adrenal glands won't become overstimulated by the stress of labor, right? And cause you to have an adrenal crisis, meaning you deplete all of your energy cells. And then all of a sudden you become very weak, very lethargic, and have some other issues with control of your vitals. And so we want to make sure we do stress those steroids to prevent an adrenal crisis, which can be life altering and even can cause you to have a, you know, an increased non-survival rate, basically. So we want to make sure that we give stress those steroids when they're needed, but we also don't want to delay giving steroids to try to suppress all the inflammation that's causing or theoretically causing Bell's palsy. The case pearl for this case is recovery prognosis from Bell's palsy during pregnancy isn't as good as it is for those diagnosed outside of pregnancy. Data suggests that the incomplete recovery could be the result of reluctance to prescribe steroids. Therefore, aggressive treatment is definitely recommended for anybody that has symptoms. All right, medical interns, do we have any more cases or email questions?
Yes, this one says, I was diagnosed with Bell's palsy about 8 months ago and still have facial drooping, watering eyes, and numbness of the right side of my face. I took high-dose steroids when my symptoms first started, but I still have the same issues with little improvement. Besides steroids, are there any additional treatments for Bell's palsy?
Well, let me recap. So this person has Bell's palsy. I'm not sure if it's encircled around the pregnancy timing or not, because I don't remember the medical intern reading anything about pregnancy, but you've had it for 8 months. In regards to if you're pregnant or not pregnant, that's a really long time to have persistent symptoms. So at this point, I would make sure that if you already, if you're not on, you sound like you're on high-dose steroids, but if you haven't gotten Botox injections, which can help relax the tone of the muscles and also help decrease inflammation, that would be an alternative treatment for Bell's palsy. I would also refer you to a facial paralysis expert. Okay, so that's a subspecialized neurologist that can further talk to you about other treatment options, including selective neurolysis. This is the surgery that provides sort of a reanimation of the smile that is lost with a persistent Bell's palsy. Or that facial paralysis expert may want to do some neuromuscular retraining with is physical therapy, aggressive physical therapy that targets directly that facial nerve. Okay. And so it's really important that if you have Bell's palsy, that you, if you're pregnant, you need to see a maternal fetal medicine specialist and your neurologist, who may then refer you to a subspecialized neurologist that is an expert in facial paralysis specifically. Okay. But we have to get on the same page to make sure you get the best care possible and as aggressive as possibly as you possibly can be. All right. Medical intern, do we have any more email questions or cases? She's shaking her head no. And y'all, welcome my medical intern back. She took a little leave on us and I didn't welcome her back last week. So welcome back. Thanks you guys so much for listening to Pregnancy Pearls podcast. I hope that you've learned more about Bell's palsy and how it can affect those who are pregnant. If you enjoyed the show, make sure to share with your friends, rate and comment. If you or someone you know has had a pregnancy complication or unique pregnancy situation, let me know about it. Email me at pregnancypearls@gmail.com to hear your topic or case discussed on one of our podcast episodes. Also, remember to follow me on Instagram at pregnancy_pearls and Facebook at pregnancypearls. You can also feel free to check out the website www.drnicoleplenty.com for free pregnancy downloadables. And for goodness sakes, you guys, we have 4 seasons of the podcast. Please catch up on all of them. All of them. Binge listen to us. In closing, remember to advocate for yourself. You are your biggest advocate. And no one knows what's going on with your body except for you. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Pregnancy Pearls is hosted by Dr. Nicole Lee Plenty, produced by Nicole Plenty and Janine Brunson Johnson, executive producer Ken Johnson. Find Pregnancy Pearls on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe and rate. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice for diagnosis or treatment of individual medical conditions. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with specific questions regarding a medical condition. Pregnancy Pearls is a Mean Old Lion Media production.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.